What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. John Krofcik joining me as always. I'm Larry Rifkin. And John, we are going to go from the back burner. A lot of our issues are things that people just haven't seen yet, but they're coming into view as big issues in our society. But the issue that we're dealing with today is not back burner. It's on the front burner. And let me phrase it this way, and I'll put it in the form of a question. And I'm going to send it out to you, John. Should big tech be broken up?
I think we should look at it. I think we've done it in the past. We've done it with Ma Bell in the past, and we've done it with other companies in the past. So I think we should look at it because right now, I mean, it's really bad for small business, and they have the power and the money to really squash anything that will threaten them.
Well, you look at it, the internet has this ability to take something that was once very small, a kernel of an idea, and almost instantly becomes a part of our lives that seems indispensable. They have that ability to scale things in a way that really ramps up their importance to us in ways we never could have imagined months or years before.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, but it's kind of scary, too, because they're collecting data on us. They know us better than we know us. I mean, it's kind of spooky. You know, we should own our own data. I mean, that should be up to us. And we got to be smarter in who we give it to. But, you know, it's a spooky situation.
Well, somebody was writing in our local paper here in Connecticut, the Republican American, algorithms can predict when a customer is ready to buy, a jet engine needs servicing, or a person is at risk for disease. And then this was actually out of the Economist magazine. That's what was the genesis for this. Firms that once built torpedoes, locomotives, or appliances, GE and Siemens, now sell themselves as data firms. So things are changing so rapidly. And just back maybe 15 years ago, everybody wanted to break up Microsoft. Remember when it was too big?
Right. Yep.
And there was a lot of antitrust activity related to that. Well, now we have got what is being called the four. Now, remember, of course, the final four of the NCAA basketball tournament. Or the big four at one time in golf. I remember them being Nicklaus, Palmer, Player, and Trevino. And then it became just one guy, Tiger Woods. So we had to downsize him, and he did it on his own. He self-destructed. But now we're looking at the four as it relates to big tech. And we've got Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Apple, the four who we owe our modern era to.
Absolutely.
Now, of those, John, which do you consider to be the greatest anti-competitive threat to the United States?
Well, we got Amazon, and we got, I think the sleeper one is really Google.
Ah, the sleeper. I like that.
They're getting a lot of information on us and they're being very stealth about it.
But having said that, I mean, if you had to rely on Yahoo search, or AOL, is it still around? Or if you had to rely on Safari or any of the others, what was the Bing? Bing. I mean, would you be happy with that?
Well, hopefully our searches aren't being blocked. So, I mean, I may get a different search, but hopefully I'm getting a good spread of the right search. Now, that goes into another area about what we're able to see and what we're not. But
well,
that's another podcast.
One of these companies connects us to each other, we know, with Facebook, and then, of course, sells all that information, or they say they don't. One gives us access to more information than any time in human history, that being Google. And then, of course, with YouTube, which they bought, now every 2 seconds, 4 billion videos are being uploaded. One lets us shop for all manner of goods without leaving our house.
And have it instantly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instant gratification.
And one has built the phone that defines who we access all of this with, because they really control the dynamic there. But having said that, as I look at it, when I think about Apple, perhaps worth more than any of the others, we've got the Android platform from Google, and they have a strong competition. So I'm not certain if Apple is really dominating the market. What do you say?
Yeah, I don't know. You see, Apple is you sort of wonder if they're not kind of burning out a little bit, because their price point is getting very expensive. And without Steve Jobs at the helm there, I don't know if they're selling.
So are they giving gadgets us enough creative distinction that we say, unless I've got an Apple, I'm not part of the in crowd any longer? Maybe they're losing a little
of
that
losing sheen. I think they're losing.
Okay, so we'll strike them from the four as to whether they should be broken up. Now let's continue. Google, you're saying that perhaps they're getting a little too powerful?
Google is, they're really getting into a lot with books. They're putting electronic books online, which in and of itself isn't bad, but I mean, in the future, it could be dangerous if we don't have written word, because, you know, who knows what they can change in digital wording or you know. So I don't know. Google is doing a lot of stuff that really is, I think, kind
of creepy. Okay, so they're a sleeper. They're coming up. Now, Facebook, of course, we've seen them in the news a lot, Mark Zuckerberg, and there's a lot of concerns about security and data protection and the like. But when it comes to, well, could somebody else build a better platform? I think in Europe, they're really trying to do that and to encourage more diversity in that regard. But if we don't have another Facebook, which we do in a way with Instagram and some of these other services that young people are migrating to, is it going to really harm the economy that Facebook?
Well, I find Facebook kind of creepy. I don't know. I just the whole thing. I mean, you're giving up your life on this. You know,
but John, you don't want to be part of the community we're building. John, you don't want to play with us. Okay, but let's go then to the one that a lot of people talk about, the president's been talking about, maybe for other reasons, but Amazon. Now, they account for only 9% of all retail. However, over 40% of online retail goes through them. So the question is, as more and more of us become reliant upon online shopping, the convenience of it, the pricing of it, and of course, whenever they get into a new area or even express an interest in getting into groceries or pharmaceuticals, boom, it changes the entire dynamic in those industries.
And that's what kind of scares me about them. I mean, they're getting into medical, you know, pharmaceuticals, having one company control so much, I don't know, it kind of worries me a little bit too. I mean,
well, they're not going to get smaller. They're only going to continue to grow. So today we ask the big question: should big tech be broken up or regulated? Now, Mark Zuckerberg answered the regulation question in the affirmative when he went before Congress. He said, yeah, maybe we need more of this. Well, we're going to talk about a whole range of these issues with our friend David Cadden. And we've had him on our radio program many times. He's Professor Emeritus in the Business School at Quinnipiac University. And you're going to want to hear this. It really is interesting and an important question going forward. And it's top of mind right now on America Trends.
David Cadden is with us, a professor emeritus of entrepreneurship and strategy at the Business School at Quinnipiac University. And David, you and I know each other pretty well, but we've never really talked about this topic about big tech. Should Washington break it up? That'll be the framework for our conversation today. And they are squarely in the crosshairs of federal government today. In fact, we are recording this as Mark Zuckerberg is talking to another congressional panel.
Yeah, and I think it brings up an interesting question, just how disliked can you be and then avoid some action on the part of the government, either regulation or, as we've been talking, the possibility of actually breaking the four big tech firms up.
And when you think about it, though, I would say that the general public, David, really likes Facebook, generally, likes Apple, always relies on Google, and Amazon, they're buying from in droves. So I don't know if the general public feels the same way that the federal government is starting to focus on this.
Well, I think that when I said that, I meant that there's an increasing concern on the part of the public with respect to privacy issues with Facebook. I don't see that they see that as an issue with either Apple or Google or Amazon. And you're right. I think the public, by and large, loves the convenience of them. And that's one of the big issues if you're going to be making an antitrust case to force a breakup, would be the harm that you've done to consumers. And when consumers view that they're receiving nothing but benefits, it's difficult to make that portion of an antitrust argument.
Absolutely. So are we really looking at economics in all of this at the current time, or are we looking at security concerns, politics, bots, and the like? What's the more prevailing issue in all of this, at least at the moment?
I think probably the national security issues, privacy issues, which is a much bigger concern in Europe than apparently it is in the United States. And I think that varies from four tech firms that we've been talking about.
When we look at Apple, Google, Facebook, Amazon, they're called the Big Four, the four horsemen of the apocalypse in many ways. Which one do you think is facing the most scrutiny at the moment? Is it Facebook, because we see Mark Zuckerberg up there? Apple, I guess not so much. Amazon, because of the fight with Donald Trump. What do you see here?
I think Facebook is squarely in the crosshairs. You haven't seen Bezos or the CEOs of Apple or Google being called to testify. It is a huge issue with regard to the politics. I think it's interesting that Donald Trump has repeatedly had tweets about Amazon. I don't think it's necessarily tied exclusively with the contract that Amazon secured from the Postal Service. I think it's much more closely associated with Amazon also owning the Washington Post, or Jeff Bezos owning the Washington Post.
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All right. Well, that dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront, so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
On Twitter,
yeah.
That's right, where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is. Well,
not
you can
us,
direct
though. We
message
have
us
real news.
At Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when we look at it, let's go to Amazon for a moment. They are so huge at this moment in time, and they're getting into so many different areas. But people might say, well, let's go back in time And let's look at the others who busted up various industries. We had AMP way back in the early 20th century. We had Sears, which you could buy a house in the catalog, and that was a buster. And then, of course, Home Depot destroying a lot of mom-and-pop hardware stores. Is this any different?
I don't think so. I mean, if you take a look at the numbers, one of the first things that Amazon will tell you is that they have 4% of the entire U.S. retail market. But if you break that down, you find that they've got 44% of all online sales, which is a really dominant position. And what shocked me was the 64%, one statistic I've seen, of U.S. families are have a Prime account with Amazon. So they have a commanding position. The other thing is, as they expand outward, their reputation precedes them. You tend to find that when they talk about they're going into groceries, they're going into the possibility of drugs, and they also at one point were talking about going into dental issues, you immediately see the shares of the other companies in those industries drop the next day. So it shows that the market has a tremendous amount of respect. And when Amazon talks about entering a market, they anticipate that it may wind up having a fairly significant, if not a dominant, position.
I just read a piece in a New York paper talking about 9 blocks in downtown Manhattan and the fact that you can't find a small retailer in that space, 9 blocks around Broadway. And I know Donald Trump, it comes out of the real estate market. Is that the largest concern that he has, aside from the Washington Post, about the destruction of brick and mortar real estate, the folks that he's dealt with all of his life?
I think that he would think about that, but I think from a Prime standpoint, it's the withering criticism of the Washington Post that has raised his hackles. That's one of the other arguments when you start talking about antitrust with the Big Four, is the impact on reduction of the number of businesses. And we're not only talking about mom and pop operations, but we're saying, you know, over the last 30 years, a rather significant decline in terms of the number of publicly held corporations. So we're seeing this aggregation of power, not only in the tech industry, but in other industries.
When we go back and we look at these Big Four of today, and they're very different, and the roles that they play in our lives are very different, but you have to go back perhaps to Microsoft in the old days. And Microsoft, as you remember, David Cadden, they didn't really care about public relations and trafficking and really winning over the public, and they lost a lot of battles in part because of that. These guys have been heretofore a lot smarter than they and a little softer, even when I hear Mark Zuckerberg talking about his community. He doesn't talk about customers, or he doesn't talk about people who are online. It's all a community. It almost sounding like a nonprofit.
Gates, when, as you correctly pointed out, wouldn't put a nickel into lobbyists until he was hit with an antitrust. And the finding was against him, but it was reversed on appeal. And I think that the Google, the Apple, and the Amazon learned from that. And they have some pretty sophisticated approaches. And as you point out, Zuckerberg is doing everything, dancing between the raindrops on the testimony, to try and secure this position that he's your friend, he's your pal.
When you look at the government that we have, David, it runs on about 21% of GDP, and that's the money that we use for all kinds of things, including our military and all of the social service programs. And the question arises about big tech paying its share. And when we go back to 2007 to 2015, Amazon paid 13% of its profits in taxes. Apple paid 17%, Google 16%, Facebook paid just 4%. And in contrast, the average tax rate for those on the S&P 500 was 27%. Does anything change with the new tax law, or is that one of the big injustices that some people who want to break up big tech see?
I don't see anything in the tax law, but given its volume and that I'm not an accountant, I can't assure you of this, but I don't see it changing. I think one of the things that may have an impact is the question of overseas profits. And if you take a look at Apple, we're talking about $250 billion in cash that's been stored overseas, protected from taxation. And if, you know, there's going to be an attempt to have a one-shot bring it back at a reduced tax rate, if they don't opt for that because they don't feel it's low enough, people will complain. If they do opt for it, they'll say that the interest rate, the tax rate is too low for them. So, yeah, I think that and along with the other fact, if you take a look at their profit per employee, they are huge in comparison to most other businesses. And the reason for that is that they have much smaller number of employees in comparison to some of the industrial giants in the past and some of the industrial giants that still exist today.
Absolutely, and that is another issue that a gentleman who writes a lot about this, Scott Galloway from New York University, the Stern School there, and he talks about the destruction of jobs by the four as being very significant, and he says it's even frightening. And Facebook, Google likely added $29 billion in revenue in 2017. To execute and service this additional business, they will create 20,000 new highly paid jobs, but that's a drop in the bucket.
Absolutely. My daughter works in the grocery industry, and she is concerned with Amazon's move in that area and the disruption that that may cause. I mean, we've seen the number of mom-and-pop operations shut down, and I know that Amazon will then turn around and tell you, you know, the number of jobs they've created in some cases are greater than the number of jobs that were lost. But they're all in those warehouse distribution centers. And I have to ask the question, if Amazon is pumping in so much money into AI, how long will it be before the robots that they're utilizing to shift product around do not just merely supplement the work of individuals, but actually replaces it?
Yeah, it's interesting. Rich Lowry wrote, Amazon is not a villain, in an op-ed piece. He's a conservative, and he said its fulfillment centers are wonders of productivity and hold the promise of as yet unforeseen transformations in other businesses. He thinks this is a great thing, but I think, as you point out, while they have built all these customer centers, some call them dark factories. There aren't people there.
Yeah, they are, and they work very hard, and many of them are part-timers, so therefore they don't get health care coverage. And I know in some particular cases there have been people that were, you know, told that if they work hard, it'll be moved from a part-time to a full-time, and there are career paths available to them, and that didn't pan out. Now, that's, you know, just one story, but it'd be curious to see how that actually operates at Amazon and those fulfillment centers.
Going back to the work of Mr. Galloway at NYU, he writes, granted, we have seen job destruction before, but we've never seen companies quite this good at it. Do you agree with that?
I would say that it's been tremendous. I mean, if you take a look and we go all the way back to Henry Ford, he basically destroyed the wagon industry, you know, the people that were associated with the care and grooming of horses, the people in New York City that were sanitation that had to clean up the millions of pounds of waste that were deposited by the horses at the turn of the century on the streets. But they also created well-paying jobs and full-time jobs. And after World War II, many of those, in conjunction with the unions, wound up providing their employees with health care coverage and pensions. And I don't see this occurring in among the top tech people. I mean, it's very, very lucrative for those people who are in on the ground floor and have the technical skills. But I don't know if the rest of the people that work for the company are going to benefit to the same extent.
And let's go back to whether these companies are paying their fair share as it relates to taxes, because big tech's job destruction, as some call it, makes a stronger case that, well, if you're going to take all these jobs away because of your efficiencies, then maybe you pay your fair share of taxes, and then the government can come in and build programs to retrain others or provide social services. So there's going to be pressure somewhere along this continuum.
I think not only that, but if you take a look at the fact that Apple now just took away from Google their head AI developer, and it shows that Apple is going to have a much larger commitment to AI. We know that Amazon has it. Google has it. You heard yesterday that the idea of trolling for bots and hate speech, that they hope Facebook in 5 to 10 years, you'll have AI programs that'll be able to do that. The question becomes, given the phenomenal growing capability of some of these AI programs, what's going to happen to many jobs in the United States and in the world?
Absolutely. And then you've got AI competing against AI in terms of the fake news issue. Are you going to build a better program to find it and destroy it before it becomes rampant? Or are you going to be able to build over that an offensive capability to provide it?
One of the new approaches to machine learning that has been extraordinarily successful in creating artificial images of human beings, and also learning games such as Go, which has been perceived as being far more complex than even chess, is that they have one program play the game, another program will evaluate it, one program will generate an image, another program will evaluate it, and they can go backwards and forwards through millions of iterations in a short period of time. And I think one of the things was that the Google's program was able to become a world master in the game of Go after learning from itself and playing its own set of games in 2 days.
Amazing. It would take me or John or you at least 3 or 4 days.
Oh, at the very least, to be a world champion in the most complex game in the world. So.
Well, we talk about job destruction. We talk about fair representation of the tax situation. We talk about what it does on the ground to mom-and-pop operations. But then there's another concern. Ganesh Sitaraman, who's a professor at Vanderbilt Law School, argues that the U.S. needs the middle class and that the Constitution was designed for a balanced share of wealth for our representative democracy to work. And if the rich have too much, and then there's not a strong middle class, ultimately, we can't survive as a representative democracy. Do you see that looming at all? Because I know that Professor Galloway says it's really going to be a lot easier to create billionaires than millionaires going forward.
No, I tend to agree with that. The argument that some economists make is that as you begin to see this concentration of economic and market power, that produces income inequality. But also, interestingly enough, it actually decreases the number of startups. As you said, I was a professor of strategy and entrepreneurship, and one of the things that is very disturbing is that since 2008, we haven't been producing the number of startups, which really was the driving engine for job creation in the United States. And in some cases, some of the startups, particularly in the tech area, they're thinking right from the get-go, how will I be acquired, either by Google, Amazon, Facebook, or Apple, and have my big payday when they buy us out? And therefore, you also see some have argued fall in the research and development expenditures because the companies are anticipating that someone will start with a new idea and we'll be able to acquire it cheaply. We don't have to spend that much money on our own, unless there's specific areas such as AI or robotics, which Google went into deeply in 2013 and apparently is getting out as quickly as they went in.
When we look at Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Google, together they have a market capitalization of $2.8 trillion, which is the GDP of France. It is called a staggering 24% share of the S&P 500 top 50, close to the value of every stock traded on the NASDAQ in 2001. And to put it in perspective, David, and get your sense of when is something too big that it has to be broken up, consider this, according to Professor Galloway. Amazon,
with a market cap of $591 billion, just Amazon, is worth more to the stock market than Walmart, Costco, TJ Maxx, Target, Ross, Best Buy, Ulta, Kohl's, Nordstrom, Macy's, Bed Bath & Beyond, Saks, Lord & Taylor, Dillard's, JCPenney, and Sears combined.
Well, I'm going to get myself into some trouble with some of my finance colleagues who adopt the principle that the market is always right. You know, it's always correct. It's omniscient. You know, the way they discuss it is it's the same way a theologian discusses God. And sometimes the market does get it wrong. So right now they're looking at these four. They're giving them these phenomenal market valuations in anticipation of what these firms will be able to do in the future. And that still remains to be seen. But if we're tracking from the past, no, it's not a bad bet.
When I look at the progressives in this debate, I think we've been looking a little bit at some of the conservative approaches and what they say through Rick Lowry. Let me go to Michael Mandel of the Progressive Policy Institute. And he points out that online shopping, which of course is the commerce of Amazon primarily, saves consumers the time involved in driving to a store, looking for a product, and shifts all of that unpaid labor to paid workers in its fulfillment centers and drivers. Well, of course, we're going to have autonomous cars soon, so that will go away. This is a good deal all around, especially if Mandel is correct that these jobs in fulfillment centers pay 30% more than jobs in traditional retail. But you're very concerned, as I am, that those are transitional jobs and they'll be phased out too.
Well, I mean, let's take a look at what the president has been complaining about Amazon, that they've got such a deal with the U.S. Postal Service that the U.S. Postal Service is losing money on every delivery. Well, that was a contract the U.S. Postal Service signed onto willingly. But if you take a look at the U.S. Postal Service, as people have brought up, their losses come from the decline in, you know, mail, not packaging. Packaging is what's saving them. And yet Amazon's looking very aggressively at the idea of autonomous drones to deliver packages to customers right on their front doorstep. There's an example that Amazon could actually negatively impact the U.S. Postal Service by not having the requirement to have them deliver the packages that last few steps.
Well, David, this really is a fascinating topic that we're going to be watching for years to come, maybe even decades, to see its impact. But I'm so glad that you came by to discuss it with us today on America Trends.
Well, it's a great pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.